November 19th, 2019, session of Tangerine TeamSpeak for Tangerine SDR. My name is Dave, KV0S. And this week I've been busy with classes. We're getting near the end of the semester, so I've been doing a little programming at work, but not much on this project. So next on the list, we have Dave. KD0EAG, I know he's been busy this week. Go ahead, Dave.
Hello. Yeah, I've been trying to get some initial prototype PCB boards out the door and made so we can find out what we don't like about them. So I have been wrestling with that. That's kept me pretty busy. Otherwise, not a whole lot new to report.
Okay, well then these next on the list, we have G. Perry, KD2SAK. Go ahead, G. Perry.
Hi everybody, yeah, it's Gareth Perry from NGIT. Nothing really to report. I probably have the same report as Nathaniel coming up, which is I've been busy lecturing at NGIT and trying to get research done in time for a big meeting coming up in San Francisco in December. So I'll leave it at that and let everybody get back to it. Thank you.
Fine business. And next on the list, we have Mike, AAAK, shown as recording and Mike muted. And we thank Mike for posting the TeamSpeak audio to tsarchive.tangerinesdr.com. Next on the list, we have Nathan into NAF. Go ahead, Nathan.
Thank you very much, Dave. Yes, things are going fine here. Let's see. So this week, pretty similar to Gareth, I've been busy lecturing. I also have this large first-year faculty report that I have to submit in order to keep my job. So I have written that up, and it is printing out right now. We have started doing the bi-weekly HamSci science telecons. So those are on Thursdays, every other Thursday at 3. And so we had one this past Thursday at 3. And I think we will skip one next week because of Thanksgiving, but then we'll pick it up again after that. Let's see. We've also made good progress talking with Dave W., KD0EAG, and Troy and Frankie, which I'm sure they'll talk more about later. And otherwise, I think things are good. So W2NAF, back to net.
Fine business. And next on the list is Tom in 5EG. Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, good evening, Dave. Good evening to everyone on the group. Had a good week. Some updates to the receiver schematic, about ready to go with it. And I have a few questions for Scotty to help me figure out how to do one or two things. So plenty busy, and we worked a clean sweep in sweepstakes this weekend.
Very good, Tom, and congratulations, and it sounds like you've been busy. Next on the list, we have Troy and Frankie. Go ahead, Troy or Frankie.
Hi, this is Frankie. And
Troy. And we had a pretty good week. Sorry about the dog barking in the background, but anyway, I want to thank Dave and Nathaniel for the conference call last week, and kind of getting us up to speed. So this is AC8XP.
KEAHPA.
Back to the group.
Well, fine business. And next on the list, we have one of our fearless instigators, Scotty, WA2DFI. Go ahead, Scotty.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Dave, and thanks for running the show as usual. Great job. And I've got a new keyboard here. Unfortunately, the right hand alt key is missing on it. So I have to reach over here and get the one on the laptop's keyboard. So anyway, this past week is I've been pretty busy with getting my article done for QEX, which I finally did, and trying to get another article done for the PSR, Packet Status Register. And went out and ordered a few sound cards, some USB dongle sound cards, to try and get my demo station with the Vim3 working better, because as those of you who have Vim3s know, it doesn't have any audio port. So put one in, you need to put in a USB port. So anyway, I think that's about all for here. I think I answered your question on CAD, Tom, but if not, we can do it here. Back to you, Dave.
I have a question, Scotty. Is your article like an overview on Tangerine SDR?
Yes, well, it's actually the reviving the hands-on SDR column for QEX. And the first one, I can't believe it's been 3.5 years since I did one. But yeah, it's all about Tangerine SDR and the block diagram and the how the data flows and all that. So kind of an intro. And the PSR article is going to be kind of an abbreviated version of that. I've actually asked Kai if it's okay, because I don't want to really publish the same thing in two different places at the same time. So the PSR article might end up having to be delayed if he objects. But I did rewrite most of it, and I only used one common figure, so I'm hoping it really appeals to different audiences. But anyway, yeah, they're both on Tangerine. I think Dave hasn't solved his problem. Okay, well, until Dave gets back, I guess we're done with the roll call, and we can open it up to questions then.
Hi, Scotty. I asked a question. I didn't see a response, and maybe I overlooked it in the email. I'm trying to figure out how to generate a net list so I can go check the powers and the grounds. I tried to generate an Allegro, and I didn't get anything at all, no output. And I tried to generate an EDIF net list, and I've got several thousand net list errors.
User entered your channel.
Oh, there's Dave back.
Sorry about that. I have a networking problem that I'm trying to solve, and I have somebody coming out on Wednesday. Everything seems to work, except I have these intermittent drops, both here and on videos. And everything else seems to work, although, and I seem to think it's a DNS problem, but I'm not sure.
Okay, well, how much of my answer did you get?
I got most of your answer, and that's what I wanted to know, was what to expect in my next QAX, or maybe two QAXs down the road. Anyway, that brings us to the end of the list. I don't think anybody else has jumped in, so we're open for general discussion.
Yeah, so Tom, I did send you an answer, and I sent you a file along with it. There's an attachment, which was a DLL, so maybe your firewall blocked that.
Okay, I'm looking at email. I did not get, I can't find any responses at all.
Okay, I sent it from this computer, so give me a second here.
Okay, I don't have anything in my spam bucket.
Okay, I just sent it to you again. I sent it on the 15th, so I sent it Friday at around noontime.
Okay, I was out of, I checked email. I don't have any emails from that date, or the last one I got from you is the 12th. The last one I got from you was on the 12th.
Yeah, okay, well, like I said, it's got a DLL attached. It's not very big, but the DLL is for the PowerPCB netlist for CAD. So you put that in the right directory, and then you can go, I gave you instructions on how to pick the netlist format, which you probably already know, but you'll see a new one appear there. And that's probably the easiest one to use. That's the one I use to export to our CAD guy.
Okay, I'll wait for the email to come, and then I'll go ahead and take a look at that, Scotty.
And if it doesn't come through because of the DLL, I think you can get that DLL online. I can find what the URL is and send that to you.
Okay, that'll be good. I'll wait for a day, and then if I don't have it, I'll let you know.
Well, I hope you get it while we're on here.
Say, Scotty, I wanted to tell you, I don't think my dropping problem is the port number, because when I did OpenHPSDR session on Friday, it did exactly the same thing.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Especially since you seem to be the only one having the problem, so it sounds like it may be your ISP or your connection to your house.
Well, I changed the cable modem that connects to the outside world to my inside net. I changed it a week ago Thursday, and it's all happened since then.
Yeah, that's suspicious, isn't it?
Go one back or have them fix it.
I don't suppose you kept your old one, huh?
The old one is actually mine. I purchased the new one. It belongs to the networking company.
Okay. Well, did they have to make any changes, or can you stick your old one back in just to try it?
I haven't tried it because I'm always worried about outages for the family, and it's working well enough for email and things that are asynchronous.
I don't know if I asked you before, but did you look in the configuration for that thing and see if there were any quality of service type settings? Because all the difficulties you're having sound like things that those type devices often either use or need to use some QoS settings.
Well, the problem is I can change my internal house router, but the normal, I found the manual for the modem, and the normal default passwords don't work. So that means I'd have to reset it, and I don't want to reset it without somebody that knows what the normal settings should be.
Okay.
So, Dave W., was that photo you sent me, was that just a computer-generated one, or do you actually have boards back?
That was a CAD draw thing. I don't have boards back for a week and a half or so at best.
Okay, yeah, I was pretty impressed with the turnaround if that was the case.
They're good, but not maybe that good.
So is that board, the little board that you're mounting, is that square or is it rectangular?
It's actually, I think, square it's right at square.
Okay, so rotating it wouldn't do any good to narrow the board down. Oh, well, you could always try.
Yeah, I don't think, and this, even the latest iteration, because I've done a second one now that's being made, I have grouped a lot of the components very tightly, you know, more tightly together, as much as I wish to with 805 size C's and R's. But I did that more in anticipation of shrinking them later, if need be. For now, I'm going to go with that size board because we can use a cable to do initial testing if need be. I just wanted to get something out the door and also something that I could handle.
Well, that's good. I think that you did a great job and you got that working. And we'll hopefully it works anyway. It looks good. And if we want to shrink it down, then at some point when we go into production, we'll put the magnets, the magnetic devices right on the board, and we'll deal with that manufacturing issue, how we're going to be able to do that and shrink the board way down. But right now, sounds like for experimentation, what you did is really the best because now it's wide open.
Well, there are probably some discussion that I need to do with someone like Hyomin Kim or someone about what the concerns are too about shielding. The papers I have read about this, they're talking about using a very, you know, of a modified version of the demo, but I don't see what the modifications were. And the only thing I know to do is to move the digital parts away from the sensors to reduce perhaps electrical noise, even put them on the other side of the board, or I don't know what all. We certainly want to go for as low as we can, but it didn't seem like it was urgent to go further than this for now.
Yeah, and it would seem like maybe we might put a copper shield over it so that it shields it from electric fields but not from magnetic fields, so it wouldn't affect the readings. But yet it would keep you from picking up, local interference, electric fields. But I don't know enough about it. Yeoman would be the one to ask about that.
I just felt like it would be good to get something in hand as quickly as possible. Everybody seems eager to see one work, and the P, whatever it is, the NXP chip, the little I2C extender, is really only available in such small packages. It's very difficult to do more, to deal with it without a board. And so I'm kind of counting on getting this back to be able to do some testing.
So how many did you actually get order? How many are you going to get?
Well, it's really not this. I've already put in a second spin of it because Tom so nicely found some pretty dumb errors of mine. But
your channel timed out.
But I ordered 6 boards, which really is since there's two to make up a complete pair. They don't necessarily have to be used that way, but there's really only 3 full pairs. I can order more of them the minute I know that these are, actually work. But I'm not gonna, I don't want to get too far ahead of my skis.
Yeah, for sure. But when you get to the point where you know that it works and that you maybe want to make 10 or 20 of them to distribute, we can get Tapper, or maybe Nathaniel has some money to pay for parts and boards. So what do you think, Nathaniel?
I think we can take a look at that. Yeah, we can definitely talk about that.
Yeah, and I think this is definitely within Tapper's view. If this is kind of out of the grant area, that's certainly something that Tapper does all the time. So you shouldn't have to, shouldn't have to spend your own money and your own brain power too.
Well, true, but on the other hand, I am enjoying being able to work, as quickly as I reasonably can and not have to wait for any paperwork or any decisions. I just want to blow ahead for a little while, and it's not going to break me at this point.
Well, by all means, blow ahead as fast as you can, but keep the receipts, and we'll present it before the board and get you paid back, unless you don't want any money. I mean, that's possible.
Well, thanks. I'll try to do that. It does add up after a while.
Hey, Dave, I thought your design was really clever, being able to strap the board to make it either the remote unit or local unit. That was a very nice design.
Well, I hope I have accomplished what I intended. It's quite possible that when we get actually look at them right in hand, we may say, oops, we need to do this a little differently. But yeah, that seemed like the way to go to me. They're small enough and inexpensive enough that one board, and symmetric enough, just either with or without the sensor, which for the time being could just be plugged in, made good sense.
Yeah, Tom, that's definitely cool. I did have a question. I think, Tom, you'd suggested that he only needs the 5-volt filter on one end. There wouldn't be any problem just leaving the strap off and always putting the filter in place, would there?
Oh, no. There were bypass capacitors on the supply into the board, which is good, and then the ferrite bead, and then the caps going out. And those are only needed on the local end, and if you don't strap it for local, they're just hanging out in space, so there's no problem populating them and have them just sit there unused in the remote end case.
Well, in one of the strap positions was connecting 5 volts directly to the connector, and the other one was going through the filter. So wouldn't it be on the remote end that you just connect the 5 volts directly up to the Ethernet port, the Ethernet connector, and not have the filter in line? Because you really, the purpose of the filter is to keep the RF from the local end from getting out onto the cable. So it would seem like you just leave the filter in place all the time and doesn't not need it on the far end, but so what if it goes through an inductor and has some bypass gaps? That's okay, right?
Yeah. That inductor is chosen for pretty low DC resistance, and so I think there's no harm having those parts out at the remote end.
Yeah, so you definitely have to have the disconnect strap for the ground, right? Because you want to connect the shield on only one end.
Yeah, exactly. I'm bringing up the schematic here so I can have some intelligence in having the discussion. So, you do want to have the strap on the ground, which Dave has, and so that's a good way to do that because you can leave it off the remote end, or if you find for some strange reason that you need it, well, you can install it on the remote end. So both options are there, and that's always good to have in a prototype.
And Dave, was there a reason why you used a 3-pin jumper just because it was the same as the other one?
I think it was just because I had found it in the library and it seemed to be the best thing at the moment. That was pretty early in the game, and I didn't know where all the predefined parts were hiding that I wanted to use right initially.
Okay, that's what I thought, but just checking.
I may have thought there might be some need to tie it the other way for something. I don't remember.
Well, I was thinking from the third pin, the unused pin, you could put a cap to ground. So you'd have either, and you leave it off, you'd have it open, put one and on, you have it connected to ground. The other one, you have it capacitively coupled to ground. I don't know if that would help anything or not.
It's there if we need it.
Anyway, excellent job. I concur with Tom.
Well, I don't pretend to any level of sophistication in board design, and little things like particularly pull-ups make me crazy, as I mentioned. But I've tried to do things. I stole stuff from sources that I thought were pertinent, but there may be other issues in this that like I said about the shielding and the even the orientation of parts and things that this doesn't even begin to take into consideration, or there may not. I'm not certain that I understand what the nature of the noise is we're trying to avoid. People keep saying, oh, I've got a good quiet place. We could test it. And I'm not sure certainly we don't want a lot of electrical noise or RF in the usual senses of radio equipment. But are there sources of magnetic noise that we ought to avoid? Most magnetic fields I know of are usually fairly static unless you put it next to a, something pretty big, like a generator or something.
Yeah, like unless you live under high tension lines. By the way, we don't call it stealing, we call it design reuse.
Sorry about that.
But I think this magnetometer is going to be much more sensitive, so even things that are might not seem very large could affect this rather quite a bit.
Yeah, there's also shielding can be a little puzzling with magnetic fields. The thing you may have to be careful to avoid is not having metal forming a shorted loop around the box, because it can couple magnetically if it's a shorted turn.
But do we need to worry about power lines and things like that?
I'm sure we do if we're right underneath one, but I'm more worried about the sort of thing Tom's talking about.
User entered your channel. Picking it up from somewhere else in the system.
Yeah. I suppose a farmer's tractor driving real close might be a moving piece of hard iron that might confound things a bit, but I don't know. I don't know what to worry about.
Well, that's kind of why we're building some and we're going to test a bunch of them, right?
That's right.
Some things you just can't find out until you try to use it and see what we broke or what we didn't account for or what problems we have that we have to solve.
I can also tell you that I have seen the some of the reference magnetometers that NOAA runs out in Colorado, and they have a place called Table Mountain that you go on top of, and it's a radio quiet zone and an all sorts of other quiet zone. And their reference magnetometer, they keep it very, very, very isolated. So I was only allowed to look at it from a distance.
Yeah, last thing you need is to go up there with your HT and key down and wreck all the readings, right?
Yeah, or drive by there with a car, because as the car goes by, you have that a large ferrous object moving through, and I think that would affect the magnetic field.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, how far below the Earth do these fields extend? Could you dig a shallow hole and bury it and get better? I mean, you get shielded from everything above the Earth that way.
Well, I think what we're interested in is really what's going on, you know, above the Earth, you know, since we're interested in what's going on out in space. So, yeah, I don't think we want to bury it too far.
How about height? I mean, if I put it on the roof, is that too high? Or should it be, does the ground have, proximity to ground have an effect on it?
I'm not sure. I should probably know better. I think, you know, something to look at, there was a paper, I can find the link to it, from, they had education and public outreach magnetometers that a project called Themis, you know, put out, and they had high schools putting out these magnetometers, and they had installation instructions. So let me see if I can find that paper.
Yeah, I'm interested in that whole subject. It's kind of, it's a new area to think about.
So I'm going to wind 10,000 turns of number 18 wire around my fence, around my house, and plug it into the wall, see if I can disrupt magnetometers.
Well, my wife has a 1.5 Tesla superconducting unit that I was thinking of taking one of these over and seeing what happens, see if it blows up.
Oh, that would be cool. You could at least tell if you, I mean, it'd be way over 13 nanoteslas, right?
One would think. Be interesting to see what the shielding's like on these medical MR machines is like.
Well, I know I've been in an MRI room before when an MRI was going on, and you can't even go in the room with anything metal on you, including belt buckles, clips in your shoes, change in your pocket, and certainly not a watch or a cell phone if you wanted it to still work afterwards.
Yeah, I'm interested in what the fall off is as you move away from these things. They're installing a new 7 Tesla magnet here in town, and there's several 3 Teslas. I wonder, I think they fall off very quickly, and I think that I watched them install one of the older machines one time, and they certainly worked hard at shielding it, but I don't know.
Well, I suspect that the field inside the core is many, many, many times more than the field outside the core, because of the fact that it's a solenoid. So the, you know, at the center, the line, there's a given number of lines of flux, right? And they all crowd together in this inside the small area, and then they spread out outside the area.
This is all a mystery to me. This is new territory.
Well, everybody knows that inductors are magic anyway, right?
Scary magic sometimes.
Okay. They're right in the same category as duplexers.
Scotty, I just checked. I have not received an email.
Oh, no. You know, we're having a lot of trouble with our email. In fact, when I send my QEX article and I have to use Kai's IEEE address because the ARRL address doesn't work half the time.
Yeah, they have the ARRL ones reject all emails that have zip attachments, so you cannot, if you try to send an email with a zip to ARRL, they will never get it.
Well, let me try sending it without the file and see if that makes the difference.
Okay.
There's a good chance that somebody along the way is filtering out DLLs as well. It seems to me that's one of the, anything that's vaguely executable seems to be stripped out of these things these days.
Yeah, and there used to be a trick that you could do. I know when I was writing for QEX and Larry Wolfgang was the editor, ARRL strips out anything that has a EXE or COM or DLL. And if you zip it, it's smart enough to look inside the zip file and and see that it's an EXE or a comma DLL and still strip it out. But this is a trick. If you zip it twice, it looks in the zip file, sees another zip file, and says that's okay and passes it through.
Well, Gmail's gotten very, very smart about a lot of this stuff. And I've really found that the only way is to use something like Google Drive or Dropbox or something of that nature.
Yeah, I could put it on the file on the Google Drive, Tom.
Yeah, if I don't get it here, go ahead and send it to me without the attachment. If I get it, I'll give you a link to my Dropbox.
Okay, I just sent it, so it should come without the attachment, so we'll see. And in actuality, you could probably use any of the PADS file formats. They're probably very similar. It will give you enough ASCII. I mean, it's all ASCII, so you can just read it.
Yeah, I tried the first couple. You know, the first one didn't give me anything, and the second one gave me, you know, so many thousands of errors that it, no punctuation allowed in anything.
Did you try PADS PCB?
I didn't know what else to try. I just got your email that doesn't have the attachment.
Okay, so now we know what's going on.
Okay, I'll after the call, I'll send you a link to Dropbox.
Is it the same one we used before?
Yep, sure is.
Okay, let me see if I can find it.
Yeah, the ones I sent you before are actually links to the files themselves. They changed the user interface to Dropbox, and I haven't been able to figure out how to get the folder to be accessible.
Let's see if I can even log in here. Oh, it came up with your two RF board. Okay, so let's see if I can do anything here. It's going to let me upload it, so hold on a second.
Oh, good.
User in your channel timed out.
Now if I can just figure out where it is on this PC.
Okay, you should find the third draft.zip in my Dropbox, which is the receiver after I went in and modified the connector and did all that stuff.
User entered your channel.
Okay, I posted a link to a review book of the Themis submission. The last chapter talks about their outreach magnetometer program, and I also posted a guide, their hardware setup guide for how to install their magnetometer.
Okay, Tom, I uploaded to the Tom Dropbox shared file or directory.
I got it. Yeah,
oh,
I got it. Thank you.
Okay, very good. And the email tells you where to put it, which directory.
Okay, very good. I'm downloading it from Dropbox now.
Yeah, it's only like 70K or something. It's not very big.
All right, that worked. Thank you. I haven't tried it yet. I'll let you know if I have any issues with it.
Okay, very good. It should work for you. I mean, if there's errors, then since that's the format we use to export to CAD, you got to get an error-free one of those eventually. Otherwise, I can't export it.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I wanted to check. I figured that was the next level of looking for boo-boos in the schematic.
Well, and the thing to do is to print out the BOM and then look to see that you have properties in all the columns. You might have forgot some. I invariably forget one or two on the parts that I build.
Yeah, on mine, the columns don't justify, and so they're all scattered all over the place. But I think I've got all the columns on all the parts, with one exception.
Yeah, I know. They can't seem to figure out how to make the column line up because the tabs are too narrow. So I just import the thing into Word and add tabs until I get the thing columnized. And I usually change the font to like size 8, and then it'll fit across my screen. And then you go through and add a lot of tabs. In your case, it won't take hardly any time because you don't have very many parts. But it's when you make it line up real nice, you find out really quick which ones are missing.
Yeah, the only one I haven't found a manufacturer for is the protector diode. The distributor. I've got the manufacturer and the manufacturer part number. I haven't tracked down the distributor yet.
Can you buy it directly from the manufacturer? Because I know things like Coilcraft and Mini Circuits, I typically put vendor and manufacturer in as the same because you can't buy them anywhere else.
Yeah, I've got that on all the other parts, and I just have to track down that one diode and find out. I also need to start the filter module, so I need to do a schematic of a filter module, so I'll have a second board here.
Okay, and are we going to of course we don't know until we do the layout. I was going to say, how far apart can we get the filter connectors?
Yeah, they might we might be able to put them in the center of the module and have the filter hang out over the sides. I think we have some options there.
Yeah, and I know we can't, obviously can't make the filters asymmetrical on the connectors, because then one would fit and one wouldn't. Unless, well, actually, I don't know, maybe, are the filters symmetrical themselves so they can go in either way?
Yeah, I laid them out. The schematic should be symmetric, and I laid out the connector symmetric, so they'll plug on either way.
Oh, that's perfect. So then you could actually plug one in 180 degrees out. So if you did offset the connector, you could let them hang over the edge.
Yeah, we'll let the layout guy figure that out. But I think I'm not too worried about the options there.
Oh, our guy's so good, he can almost put parts on the edges of the board.
Yeah, Nathaniel, I'm looking at the links you have, and they both go to the same document. Is there, the page numbers don't seem to line up with the page 557 that you have. Is there some way to translate page numbers?
Give me a second. I'll give you the other page number.
Okay, I think I found it. Looks like it's on page 42.
Let's see. So I think the one I was thinking of was page 549, actually. So the Themis program, this is a satellite mission that has 5 satellites, but it also had a ground-based component with a network of ground magnetometers and auroral imagers, and in some ways, you know, basically like little space weather stations. Now, the ground magnetometer component had 2 parts. They had the more professional network, which is probably what you're seeing on page 42. And they also had the educational and public outreach network, which is on page 549. And both of those chapters would probably have useful information.
Okay, very good. I don't have any document that's got page numbers in the 500 range. I've just got the one document with pages in the 40 range, but it looks like it just says the you have to keep them 100 feet away from the building where the PC is housed to avoid noise from operators and automobiles.
Okay. I'm not sure which document you're looking at then, because I have the second document I sent goes, it's 5 pages long, and it starts at page 40 or 41 and ends on page 45. And the other document is linked to springer.com, and that one's, over 500 pages long.
Okay.
You can buy it to get anything other than the first 2 pages of each chapter.
No, I don't think you have to buy anything. I was able to access the whole thing.
Oh. Okay, well, I've got the at least the one with the 40 pages. I'll go track down the other one. But it looks like they just say keep it 100 feet away and mount it on a wood post about 3 feet up and make sure that critters don't chew through the cable.
That's always good advice.
Yeah, you see where they use the garden hose to protect it from the chewing critters?
It's kind of clever.
Okay, I found the one you're talking about, Nathaniel. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, so tell me how I can load this, because I see where it says downloads, and I see where I can click on chapters, but it doesn't do anything when I do that.
Can you hit download PDF?
I tried it, and I got an HTM link rather than a PDF.
That's weird. Yeah, I'm opening it up in my browser, and maybe there's a cookie in there or something, but it's just going straight to the PDF.
Oh, yeah, you're right, Tom. I go to the HTML link, too, where you can buy the ebook or you can buy it. So it's got all the chapters and the page numbers, so you can scroll down and pick the one that has page 557 in it, and you can go to it, and they show you the first 2 pages, but then you got to pay like $20 to buy the chapter.
Oh, I see. That's weird. Yeah, I just opened it up in a fresh web browser, like a guest window or something that's not my normal one. And yeah, it's giving me the same thing. But when I had linked to it another way, it wasn't charging me at all for it.
Okay, yeah, I've got the same thing as Scotty. I get the abstract and page 1, and that's it.
Okay, hold on. Let me send you a different link.
Okay, Ed, don't worry about it. Is the other one that you sent, the one that's from berkeley.edu, is that one the page 44 or 43, whatever it is, as though is that adequate in terms of installation instructions?
Probably. That's what they were teaching all of the high school people what to do.
Okay, that may be good enough, at least for us for the time being. At least have the suggestions about, you know, how far away to get it and what kind of post to put it on, stuff like that.
Yeah, honestly, that's probably going to be the more useful document for you.
Yeah, it did not work with the other link that you sent, so I suspect it's expecting a cookie on the computer.
Okay, sounds good. Well, if you want access to that, email me and I can send it to you that way.
Okay. I think the other one you sent is probably good for us hams.
Sounds good.
User entered your channel.
Yeah, I don't know why it did that, because I'm not, as far as I can tell, I'm not logged in. You know, I'm sitting at home, not on campus, and I don't think I'm logged in over any VPNs or something that would give me special access. So I'm not sure why it's letting me in.
You have a powerful computer.
I guess that's the answer.
Yeah, I tried pasting it, just cutting the address out, pasting into Chrome. It does the same thing.
So Dave, Nathan,
you get the award for being the first board out the door.
What's that?
Dave Witten gets the award for having the first board out the door.
Sounds good. I'm keep missing parts of the talk. I'll have to listen to the recording later and probably have this annoying missing session and then coming back into the session.
I'm going to feel better when I have a board that works. Out the door is easy.
Well, out the door's first, then working out the door second, right?
So we need to take a poll here. I tried Nathan's link, and I was able to get it, and Nathan got it. So if Garrett can get it, you have to be an academic to get the link.
Well, we could probably violate a whole bunch of copyright laws and post it up on the Google Drive.
I tried to buy the $39 PDF, but Springer tells me I already have an account, but I have no idea what password it uses.
Okay, well, reading from the other document, it says the sensor is designed to be installed in a post hole about 1 meter below ground level to minimize temperature effects.
Wow, so you can put it below ground.
Well, this one you can. Hopefully we won't have to do that on ours.
Yeah, they show the box. Did you see the figure 33 there? It's on page 43.
Yeah.
With the blue magnetic shield test can. It looks like it's wood.
I think that's a blue wooden shipping crate of some kind with, how do you say it, new metal shielding rings inside of it. You'll see there are concentric rings, and that's the way they seem to do the magnetic shielding.
Okay, but that's they're actually shielding it there and getting like a baseline reading, right, instead of letting the magnetic field cut through it.
I think NJIT has one of those shield containers as well.
The GPS guys use putting those kind of shields and then put a GPS antenna in the center.
Okay, but it's a magnetic shield or an electrical shield?
So they use those brass rings around a GPS receiver as a gain control, really.
Oh, so it shields it from terrestrial signals then.
Those concentric cylinders are mu metal, not brass or copper or anything electrically shielding. They're designed for magnetic shielding, and they but they are not, you can't just put thicker layers or something. I don't know, there's something weird about it. You have to use concentric rings of it. Somewhere I read that.
Okay, right, but it's a magnetic shield as opposed to a steel, something that's steel that was copper that would block electric fields but would allow magnetic fields through.
Yeah, it's mu metal, which is what a real high, I don't know, a nickel or something alloy. you know, like they used to put on shields on tubes and high-end audio amps and stuff. You had these little metal jackets that went around your tubes. They were always mule metal, and also transformers and such.
Yes, nickel, iron, copper, and chrome from molybdenum, and has an extremely high mu. Wow, it's 80 to 100,000 permeability relative to steel, which is only several thousand.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff. I've got some small pieces of it, but I don't have enough to build a shield like that for any useful purpose.
Yeah, I remember we used to use them at Motorola to shield power supplies and things like that from leaking their magnetic fields out into the box of electronic gear. But it's interesting because since the magnetometer basically, it's detecting magnetic fields, right? So if you put it inside a mu metal cylinder, are you going to get any magnetic fields? Are you going to detect any at all? Is it going to be like putting it in a RF chamber?
Yeah, my interpretation was that was the intention, that that test shield can is to try to get a very low residual field so you can calibrate out the errors.
Oh, okay, that makes sense now.
The paper, I don't remember the name of it, but the one where the folks up at University of Michigan characterized this this magnetometer we're using. They use both a copper room and those kinds of shields, probably for, like Tom says, in the characterization process. They seem to have a pretty elaborate facility there if you look at all their pictures.
Yeah, fortunately, that's not needed for deployment. That's just for characterization. So it looks like for deployment, they're actually burying the sensor.
That's the kind of thing I'm interested in. It, you know, might have some impact on how we package things if we are burying it in the ground or sticking it up in the air. One nice thing, I think, in this case, is that PVC pipe makes awfully good thing to stick it inside of if it's going to be away from other sources, because it's pretty well permeable to all this stuff.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. This article doesn't say what the sensitivity of this sensor is. You know, if it's two orders of magnitude more sensitive than ours, we may not have a need to be quite so finicky as they are.
I think the other document I sent will have that information in it.
Okay.
This is the Themis document. Is that what you're quoting?
Yeah, that will probably have that technical information in it.
This is Troy. I think I can spend some time this week, down at our library, and we've got access to some of these. I know some others on this call probably have it as well, but maybe this is something we can make it, you know, do for our contribution.
That would be nice. I'm chafing at the fact that I seem to be cut off from our university's resources of that sort, and even though they supposedly had a spousal library card, they couldn't figure out how to give me one.
So Nathaniel, do we need can we get an idea of how many of these we're going to need, kind of anticipating Dave's success with the prototypes here and figuring out how many we're going to saddle him with coming up with?
How many of these prototypes we need? We should probably have one to match every prototype of the personal space weather station. So I think what's in the grant is to pay for basically six prototypes. That's what we budgeted for, partially because the grant is only supposed to cover prototypes. It's not supposed to cover like distribution or deployment of these instruments. That's beyond the scope of what that grant is. So initially, you know, we had about six, we've budgeted for six, I think.
Okay, I'm just thinking, you said you had some people who are willing to test, and we can test with the Raspberry Pi without having the data engine done. And if Tapper was willing to fund, I mean, they're not that expensive. Tapper could fund, you know, 10 of them or 15 of them. Could we plant 15 of them around the with the researchers to get start grabbing some data? And then maybe we'd have some kind of test platform for some of Bill's software when he gets it set up.
So the answer to that is definitely. So Hyoman is supposed to, I know he sent an email over to Dave, and he wants to work out a test plan for the magnetometers. So one site we definitely want to do is the Jenny Jump Observatory. Another site that we want to do is Troy and Frankie Bonte. And then we can talk about additional places that we might want to do. But I think Hyoman is supposed to take the lead on deciding where to test the magnetometers.
Yeah, and I'm all for that. Just I'd like a number so I can be prepared to go to the board and ask for some money.
Okay, we will do that.
I will be receiving, you know, these blank boards, but the they aren't, you know, they're not assembled, and I'm not sure how easily I can shift to. I can do one or two for sure, and maybe some more, but I don't like that PCA 9615. It's a little bit on the small side for me. I'll have to see how well I can solder that up. But at some point, we have to contemplate having this thing assembled if we go into production. So that's, I don't want to get too, don't want to promise too many prototypes real early on.
Well, that's okay, because if that part doesn't have a pad underneath it, then we can do it here. And I'm gonna go out on a limb here and volunteer our scouts to do the assembly, because they love doing SMT assembly. And if you've got 805 parts, those are a piece of cake. That little part, I think we can handle that. And because we got microscopes and the proper tools here at my company, and that's where we meet. So when it gets to the point where you feel uncomfortable with doing too many, just we could take over the not production. I want to do, but like if we're just going to build like 10 for distribution, we can certainly do that number. They would love to do that.
So Scotty, if I were to give you a number off the top of my head, I would say somewhere between 10 and 30 is a really nice number for those magnetometers.
Okay, because Dave, we got to buy a magnetometer for each one, which is $20, and then we got to buy the boards, and then, but you had an estimate for, if we were to build, say we were to build 25, can you come up with an estimate for how much money we need to buy all the parts and the boards and everything?
I was trying to just, I don't have a proper estimate yet, but I was thinking it through as I was driving along. At this point, those boards are costing about $10 a piece in this very early stage. So, you know, it's the basic unpopulated board. I think the most expensive non-magnetometer component on there is the PCA 9615 or whatever it is. And I believe it was maybe $1. And everything else is, you know, pretty minor. Maybe the fuse or the ferrite bead, you know, those things that none of them are real expensive. Maybe the component was, I would guess it's under $20 for the BOM and the minus the board. And, plus whatever at this stage, that's really low volume.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you estimate like say, $40 a board, 25 boards, $1,000. So, you know, as long as we can stay under $1,000, I think we have a chance of getting, some money from Tapper. And so maybe we only build 20 or, we have a lot of SMT parts around here. The R's and C's I wouldn't even worry about because I probably have those in stock. We have to buy the magnetometer boards. We have to buy the connectors maybe and the PC boards. And if you bought 25 boards, does the cost go down below $10?
We'd have to. I don't think they list any price breaks for the demo boards. what they call the breakout board. They call it the breakout board. I don't think they list a price break, but we can always ask. They're not that much above the price of the components. I don't know. We just have to ask.
Oh, no, I was referring to your board. Their board, I've seen on their website. I think they do actually have a quantity discount, but I was figuring $20 for their board, and then whatever your PCB, your blank PCB cost, then the parts that we solder down. So the I2C extender, and then the R's and C's and connectors. And probably the RJ45 is the next most expensive part.
Yeah, you're right. I wasn't thinking of that. But there are price breaks on getting the boards the boards made. I'm sure we could save a little bit there. So, every penny counts.
User disconnected from your channel.
Okay, well, when we get there, we can certainly arrange to build some number of them before we actually go into production. And I don't know. It may be something a Tapper wants to build as a kit. I mean, it sounds like, other than that one very small part, sounds like it could be something that the user could buy and solder up himself. We could provide a bag of parts.
Yeah, that's sure an option. I've been using OSH Park to make these boards because they do let me do really small volumes of prototypes and are pretty quick to turn them around. But one feature of that is also that I can share the part on their site. It's kind of like GitHub. And then someone can, somebody else who's interested in it, and I've done this pretty often, save themselves designing something. They can just, currently I've got them hidden, but once we decide they work, we can share them, and somebody can just buy himself. They come in a minimum of three at a time, but somebody can, for $30, someone can get three of these boards.
But then you got to buy the parts, so then it treads on group buy territory. You know, they could do things like that, but that's kind of one of the things that Tapper is really good at, is we'll make stuff easy. We'll send you a whole kit for, you know, $30 or whatever.
Yeah, that's certainly, that's great. It's fine with me. The OSH Park idea was just if there were some trailers or somebody somewhere else we didn't know that didn't interact with us much but was interested.
So do you actually get the Gerbers, or do you have to buy them from OSH Park, or can you buy volume boards from OSH Park?
Well, let's see. Most companies, you upload the Gerbers to them, I believe. I can create Gerbers. They actually can take my KiCad designs directly into their system, and they redraw from, KiCad's one of the things they're optimized for, KiCad and Eagle, you know, because they're for a hobbyist market, not so much a pro thing. I don't think they'll give me the Gerbers, but I can I can export the Gerbers.
Oh, okay. I thought you were using their software, and it was one of these PCB Express kind of places. So that's cool. So if you've got the Gerbers, then when we're ready to build, 500, we have no problem just going to a board shop and ordering them that way.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I didn't want to. It's not like Geppetto, where they do hang on to the Gerbers, but Geppetto's for a different kind of thing. Gum sticks. Geppetto is kind of interesting if you want to build a few of a specialized, but more complex sort of board, but from fairly standard parts using usually higher end microprocessors. And it's not for this kind of thing.
Yeah, okay, very good. Well, like you said, you don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but it sounds pretty exciting.
I'm glad everybody's making good progress. I'll be really interested to see how this comes together, and love to get stuff in everybody's hands so they can have part of the fun.
I'm quite excited to see this come together.
Yeah. So I think it's going to be fun to see magnetometer data come in, you know, even before we have anything else.
I think it'll be a good way to get things going. In a lot of ways, the magnetometer data is some of the simplest data we're going to have to deal with, and also some of the most straightforward to interpret.
Yeah, and very low speed too. So it's a good test of networking to see how we do.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this.